Good evening. You're listening to special election coverage on KRBD Ketchikan. My name's Layla Carey, and for the next hour, we'll be talking with the two Senate District Q candidates, Senators Bert Stedman of Sitka and Albert Kukesh of Angoon. This is a live call-in show. Coast Alaska stations throughout Southeast, including KCAW in Sitka, KSTK in Wrangell, and KHNS in Haines, are airing the forum live, and listeners from all the communities within the new Senate District Q are welcome to participate. If you have a question for the candidates, please call 225-9655 in Ketchikan, Saxman, and Metlakatla, or 1-800-557-5723 if you're calling from elsewhere in the region. But first, let's hear an opening statement from each of our candidates, starting with Senator Kukesh. What would you like voters to know about you?
Thank you very much for letting me be here tonight. I was born and raised in Alaska. I'm from Angoon. I still live in Angoon. It's a little village on Admiralty Island. And the only time I've left Angoon is to attend school. I went to Mount Edgecombe High School and graduated from Mount Edgecombe High School to Alaska Methodist University in Anchorage and received a bachelor's of arts from there, and went to the University of Washington Law School, and I have a Juris Doctorate degree from there, and I've been a member of the legislature for 16 years, 8 years in the House of Representatives, and 8 years in the Senate.
Okay. Thank you very much. And Senator Stedman.
Well, thank you for having us here this evening, and it's nice to be on the radio throughout Southeast Alaska. My wife, family on my dad's side came here in 1902, and on my mom's side in the mid-teens, fishing halibut. You know, on the Stedman side, they were on the gold rush. And the Stedmans have pretty much lived within Central Southeast since then, from Fort Wrangell to Petersburg, Cake, and Sitka. I think the Stedman house was built, I think, in 1914 or 1918, in Petersburg, and I don't know when my granddad built the Espeseth house there. It was a while back. Anyway, the family is grew up mainly mainly in Petersburg, and then we moved to Sitka when I was in eighth grade and finished high school there. And from that, I went on to the work for a couple of years, and then ended up going to the University of Oregon in Eugene. And got a degree in business with a concentration in finance, and came back and worked and lived in Sitka since then, doing financial service work. And then 9 years ago, went into the Senate, actually as an appointment by Governor Murkowski to fulfill a one-year term, and then have run for re-election a couple of times, and have represented Ketchikan, Petersburg, Wrangell, and Sitka in some of the smaller communities since then, although now with the redistricting, you know, Petersburg is now included with Juneau, and Albert's House district is pretty much absorbed in with the new Senate district. So now we're pretty much all in Southeast in the same canoe. We got kind of June when they're separate canoe, but we'll let them row alongside us as we try to work together to get things done in Southeast, and I'm looking forward to the discussion this evening.
Thank you. And you kind of led me into my first question, which is redistricting has once again changed the boundary lines for representation throughout Alaska. And in this case, it's made you two incumbent senators into competitors. How do you feel about that? And what makes you more qualified to represent us than your former colleague? We'll start with Senator Stedman.
Well, my former colleague is retired, so our hopefully the current former colleague, and I Senator Kukesh probably has the same sentiments there. But, you know, before we had the oil rush, Southeast was a dominant center within Southeast. We had this real heavy salmon canning industry 100 years ago, and there, from there we went into the timber industry. And then the major industry focus went north into the Anchorage area and then the North Slope, and now resides in Anchorage due to oil. So we have had changing demographics in the state, which has led us to a decline in the state senators. After this election on November 6, we'll be down to 2 in Southeast, 1 in Juneau, taking care of Juneau Petersburg, and the other one, either Albert or myself, will take care of the rest of Southeast. So it's just the demographic changes. It's probably going to continue. The next time we have a big oil build-out to a gas line or what have you, it's probably going to get worse. So I'm a little concerned about that. But to the ending part of your question on what makes one person, you know, more advantageous to represent the people than another one, I guess the people are going to decide that. And we can talk tonight about some of the initiatives or some of the projects or records, what we've done. And looking forward to that conversation. I've got a 9-year record within the Senate and 6 years as co-chair of the Senate Finance Committee, in charge of all the legislation that comes through the Senate that has any appropriation with it at all, goes to the Senate Finance Committee, and then the capital budgets, all capital expenditures. And there's been some turbulent economic times that we've had to deal with, delivered from the national level and international level with the Great Recession of 08, that the Finance Committee has been very instrumental in keeping the state of Alaska out of a recession. And myself, one of the most adamant proponents for a large capital budget to keep the recession out of Alaska, keep Alaska citizens working and giving them the ability to make their mortgage payment and take care of their family. Some people may grumble about the size of the capital budget, but you can look around the state, and particularly you can look around the Senate district, and you can see a change, a physical change in the waterfront and the viewshed within the community. And in fact, sitting here, you can look out the window to a new library sitting right outside the window here at the radio station in Ketchikan. But you can do that type of visual inspection in pretty much every community I've represented.
Thank you. Senator Kukesh.
Thank you very much. You're going to find very little differences between Senator Stedman and myself. We've served together and helped make decisions in different parts of the Senate quarters in Alaska and the legislature, and we've kind of marched along the same path for a couple of years now, so it's going to be hard to find differences. We've had a lot of agreements, and behind the Senate coalition that we were part of and formed with 10 Democrats and 6 Republicans, and we've done a very good job. It changed the atmosphere in the Capitol. People thought a little bit different about it. We have, of course, right now we have the governor of the state of Alaska not too happy with us. I think he's been happy with us for quite a while. But in terms of the redistricting, I'm going from representing 129 communities to representing just those in Southeast Alaska that is part of the Senate, new Senate District Q. And coming from 129 communities to these, to compress it to a few, makes the job so much easier for me. I mean, I had to represent 129 communities, and to try to even get to every one of those communities was a major job. And I had an excellent staff who worked really hard with me to put that together. And I appreciate the discussion about the capital projects. We've all, as senators in the state, have had to get capital projects for our communities and for our district. And I think that's part of the job. We all have to do that. Every senator in the district and every House member in the Senate, in the House, has to do that. It's part of the job of being a member of the legislature. But there's also the job of legislation. And I've been in legislature long enough to know that while there's some good legislation, there's also a lot of bad legislation. Part of our job is to make sure bad legislation doesn't go forward. A good example, of course, is the $2 billion giveaway that the governor wanted us to do on oil tax reform. Now, Bert and I agreed on that. We worked really hard to stop it, and we're paying a little bit of the consequences now with the governor not being too happy with us. As far as my work in the legislature, 16 years in the legislature. Most of my years, I have to admit, in a minority. 8 years in the House is all in a minority. A couple of years in the Senate, and then we put together this coalition. It's worked wonderfully. We've had a great record over the years of doing things that's in the best interest of the state of Alaska. And I have to compliment Senator Stedman. You know, he was one of the people that helped us put this together. And we were, I'm grateful to it because I just got so tired of being in a minority, and I appreciate the opportunity. I served in the majority for a while. It was wonderful. But we don't know what the Senate makeup is going to look like after this election. And we're both out there wondering how our colleagues are going to survive and how we're going to survive. We know we're going to be one short in Southeast because at one time we had 3 senators in Southeast, and Bert's absolutely right. Now there's only going to be 2. And I think that's bad for Southeast Alaska. This is one of the areas of the state of Alaska that's been a leader in the state, and it's hard now to see us down to 2 senators.
Okay, thank you. And we do have a caller on the line. It's John from Haines. Go ahead, John.
I wonder what each candidate's stand is on the Conley Lake Hydro Project in Haines.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead. We'll start with Senator Kukesh this time.
I've always been a supporter of every hydro project in Southeast Alaska. I don't think there's a hydro project that I don't like. I think everybody in Southeast Alaska has to be on a hydro system eventually if they have a hydro potential near them. So I'm supportive of that. I don't know why we would not be supportive of any hydro system in Southeast Alaska. We've put money up for hydro monies all over Southeast Alaska, and I hope we continue to do that.
Thank you. And Senator Stedman?
My historic practice has always been to listen to the communities, let the assembly or council make the policy call, and then give me a direction of what they want, where they want to go. And I'm still working through that situation in Haines, because Haines will be new to my Senate district, or District Q, I should say. It's not my district. It's a people's district. But generally speaking, I agree. We've been very, all of the elected representatives from Southeast have been very aggressive and supportive of hydro throughout Southeast. Connolly Lake is no different. When I was up in Haines last time, what I found kind of curious is why doesn't Haines own their own hydro generation like Sitka and Ketchikan, Wrangell, and Petersburg do, and thereby control their energy destiny? That's a local issue that, you know, I'll have to try to figure out, you know, where Haines, the community, is. I would like to see the project go forward, and several others, quite frankly, in Southeast. That's only one of them in the very northern end. I am concerned that the cost of electricity in Haines at roughly mid-20s, 23 cents or so a kilowatt, and $4 oil, that same rate is sitting in Fairbanks, 23 cents, and they heat their homes on oil, and that town's dying. So Prince of Wales is similar in rate structure to Haines, and I'm concerned with both the entire Prince of Wales Island and Haines. If we're going to get economic development and keep our population from imploding, stabilize it, and make sure we have prosperity in front of us, we need to get that electrical rate down. And I've talked with several of folks about how to do that, and we need to have some analysis done on the rate structure to take a look at what is embedded in that rate structure driving that rate to what I think is an unbearable level in the low 20s. And then we can go to Angoon, or we can go to Cake, that are running on diesel, and it's even worse. Those are a little different set of problems to deal with. So I guess you won't find, I'd be surprised if you find any state in the House or in the Senate official that does not support the development of hydro, including Conley Lake.
Okay. And we have an emailed question from Jim in Ketchikan. He asks, what can you do or how do you feel about the funding of the Black Sands Beach State Trail Access Project on Gravina? And there's a second part of the question, what is your perspective on the general funding level of the Alaska State Parks System? And this time we'll start with Senator Stedman.
Well, I'm not really prepared tonight to answer in detail the question on that park trail. I'd have to take a look at the issue. I know there was a concern dealing with that park in general a couple of years ago, and I wasn't aware that there was still an issue out there remaining in that. As far as the parks part of the operating budget, that's always a challenge because it's kind of like the library budget. You know, if your budgets get tight, it's something easy to whack. I frankly believe that most of Southeast is already a park, I'm a little hesitant to create more parks unless there's really good reason to do so. The federal government has the Tongass pretty much locked up, and we're trying to struggle with that issue. So I have been a supporter of the parks budget and creation of a couple of them, one of them which is the Fort Rousseau Park in Sitka, which is outside on the causeways off the airport. That's where World War II gun emplacements and so on and so forth was installed. And we worked that through the legislature to create that park. But that park is targeted to be self-supporting financially. We're trying to have a park and then have the tourism folks come in and, you know, disembark off of a boat and then go walk around. So we're trying to keep the parks as financially independent as possible.
Okay. Senator Kukesh?
Thank you very much. I appreciate the question. I was there. We talked about Park and Sitka, and I was there when we helped to create that. And I really believe that the parks in Alaska, that Alaska parks are so important to us that if there is a budget question that comes up on parks, I want to be supportive of it, and I always have been. The question specifically to the trail that he mentioned, I'm not really familiar with it. I'm like Senator Stedman. I'd like to see more about it and hear what the community wants to do in that direction. I'm not really familiar with it. I'm supportive of us having as many parks in Alaska as we can. I'm supportive of making sure we have budgets to make sure those parks survive and do well. I like the idea of parks because people can share the use of it, and there could be multi-purpose uses of those. And so I'd like to see what the budgets are. I really would like to spend some time with those budgets. I'm more familiar with the Tongass National Forest, if you know my background and how that works and how it's tied up and how the federal government approaches its land use in those areas. But state parks are something that I'm very supportive of.
Thank you. And we have another emailed question from Dan in Sitka. He asks, would either of the candidates write support expanding and increasing? I think he just meant support. Would either of the candidates support expanding and increasing the foundation formula to include preschools? And this time we will start with Senator Kukesh.
Absolutely. One of the areas in Alaska that, if you'll notice, most of the preschools in Alaska right now are funded through the federal dollars, through the rural cap, and almost every Head Start in Alaska is funded that way. We have a pilot program in Alaska that we started a couple of years ago, but I really think we have to stop having pilot programs and really get into the main funding of Head Start programs. They're so important. I've seen it firsthand in Angoon. When we didn't have a Head Start program, we had kids going into the first grade that weren't prepared for school at all. And so they're already behind. I've noticed last 4 years since we've had a Head Start program in Angoon that the kids going from Head Start into kindergarten and first grade can tell us about the alphabet. They know the alphabet. They know how to read a little bit. They know how to write. And it's already a head start for us. And it's such a benefit, at least to my village of Angoon and the other villages that I'm familiar with, to have a Head Start program. It's the greatest program in the world. And I had a discussion with the governor about his $400 million scholarship program. And I said, if I was the king for the day, I'd take that $400 million and put it in the Head Start rather than to that scholarship program that he wanted and that we had such a huge discussion on. No, I'm supportive of Head Start programs. I think they ought to have it in Alaska. It should be part of the formula, and it should be part of the funding process in Alaska for education, because I really think we need to start those children off on the right foot, and by doing that, you start up an education process sooner rather than later.
Senator Stedman?
Well, I don't like the budgetary impacts of it. We're struggling with that. But as far as the concept of Head Start, unfortunately, I think it's a very needed program. There's a lot of parents that, in my opinion, don't spend enough time with their children. And you see it in the kids' challenge to the alphabet and the colors and some of the fundamental building blocks when they enter school. And it puts them at a disadvantage right out of the gate. And some of the kids, you know, they're just not going to catch up. So, you know, I support trying to get a system in place that will give the kids in our communities a chance of a better lifestyle than their parents. And the way you do that is through education. So we just got to figure out the budgetary issues with Head Start and get the ball rolling. Because, you know, I agree that when you have particularly small communities, it seems to be a little more of a challenge, or maybe it's just more noticeable. Certainly in the bigger communities, we have our social issues also. But we need to give all the kids throughout Southeast an equal opportunity to aspire to greatness as they grow up. And I think we could do better than what we've been doing. And clearly, we are an extremely rich state. And if the state of Alaska can't do it, then I don't think any state can.
Thank you. And this was from a listener who submitted this earlier in the week. Do you support a plan to change the way Alaska taxes oil production if the plan encouraged new exploration, encouraged new oil in the pipeline, provided incentives for Alaska hire, and rewarded performance? This listener says that the estimated loss for communities if the governor's plan had been adopted would be about $50 million per year that the state could otherwise use to fix roads, for example. And this time we'll start with Senator Stedman.
Anybody that sits and says that our tax structure is not broken doesn't understand the tax structure. It's just that simple. But it's also as clear to me that the governor's HB 110, House Bill 110, is so far off the mark it's ridiculous and should have never even been filed. We have structural problems within our tax code, particularly when we have a price of oil in excess of $100. And when we're pushing $130, $140, $150, we definitely have some problems inside it as far as taking away too much of the upside to the oil industry. And it pushes their rates of return down, not in so much in the existing fields, outside of existing fields, outside of the legacy fields, where they have to put in new capital, expand the pipelines, and put in new drilling platforms and so on and so forth. The rate of return numbers aren't high enough. As far as existing production, we've had testimony at the finance table saying that we don't have a problem at $100 to speak of. The governor stated we don't have it at $80. So at the most he can argue about is the difference between $80 and $100. So we do need to take a look at that. But in this current year, FY13, we've got $800 million in incentives and credits in the budget for the oil industry, $800 million. The oil basin is worth $22 billion forecasted for FY13 in gross values. $22 billion costs $6 billion to take the oil out, ship it down the pipeline, sell it. That leaves you a pile of billions left, like $16 billion. And it's only split three ways, between the federal government, the industry, and the state of Alaska. So the challenge is outside of existing fields. Also within our structure of the oil tax, the gas that is used and or sold, like through the LNG plant in Nikiski, has a negative value to the Treasury. Because the way it flows through the tax code, it ends up negative and is offset against the oil tax and actually drives the oil tax down. So in my position is if we need to fix the oil tax at rates over $100, prices over $100, we need to fix the gas tax. If the gas is worthless, then give it away. But don't pay the oil industry to take it. Nobody on this planet that I'm aware of, other than the state of Alaska, pays the industry to take a hydrocarbon. So that just, it's ridiculous. So, and also the credits, $800 million in credits. We've got credit problems where we, if they have a capital expenditure of $100 million, we pay $20 million of it up to 40, but just use 20, use a low number. And we allow them, those of you in the business world that are familiar with depreciation, we allow them to depreciate it over their IRS projected life, 7 years, 8 years, whatever it is, 10 years. But you also get to expense it in the year it's expensed. So if you spend $100 million in capital, you get to write off the $100 million plus depreciate it and get 20% off. You don't hear people talking about the incentives we have embedded in our tax structure. All they want to do is lower the rate and keep the incentives. And quite frankly, if we would have adopted the governor's bill, again, I think it was even a breach of his fiduciary duty as governor of the state of Alaska to put forward a bill that egregious and then to defend it. It's even worse. And not be able to explain it to the satisfaction of virtually the entire state. We need to be fair with the industry, but we need to, when we adjust that rate at oil prices over 100, we need to also fix the problems that the state has on their side of the ledger. If you only fix one side of it, you'll make the system worse. Basically, at $150 a barrel, the tax rate's too high and the credits get too high. And to show you how wacky it gets, if oil got to $200 a barrel, which isn't, double from where we are today, we'd be basically paying 100% of their capital expenditures. That is nuts. And until all of the items are put on the table, which we tried to do in Senate Bill 192, which I was the main author of, that bill that didn't get through the system, until we take care of, both sides of the ledger, the system is going to be out of balance and it's going to lead to problems.
Thank you. Senator Kukesh.
You know that all the technical and number of things are out of the way, I can get down to a simpler answer. And Bert is really good at that, too. I have to tell you that. He leads the charge for us in most areas. But for the people just on the street who said, what is the question here and what is the answer? The question is, should we adopt the governor's proposal to change oil taxes in the state of Alaska, and to what end? And to me, at least as I understand it, the question is whether or not we want to change oil taxes to make sure the big oil spends more money in Alaska. Well, we're willing to give the incentives, but we weren't able to get an answer from the oil companies that said they would do it one way or the other. Are you willing to spend some money in Alaska for new production? Couldn't get an answer for them, and the governor continued to push us on it. The man on the street doesn't understand all of the numbers that are out there, but they do understand that if we gave it away, it would almost be a $2 billion giveaway, and none of us wanted to see that happen. So we did adopt something in the Senate. It didn't go anyplace. It was to give tax credits on new fields, but that's not what the governor wanted. He wanted a lot more than that. But I'm a little bit concerned now that when I see the Anchorage papers come out and I see the oil companies saying, vote for the people who are going to support oil tax reform, and they're paying for the ads, and it's big oil company that's paying for the ads. I'm really uncomfortable with that, because I think people have to understand that if we want to fill the pipeline, if we want to do the work the governor essentially wants us to get to, we can't do it just by changing oil taxes. There's got a lot more to it than that. I like the idea of giving incentives to new fields, and I think that's important, or new technology that will get us to the point of getting to more oil in the gas pipeline, or the oil pipeline. But at the same time, it really comes down to this. I don't want to do anything that's going to benefit the oil companies only. Bert is absolutely right. There's a three-way partnership in this thing, and Alaska has to benefit from it. It can't be just a one-way street.
Let me add two other quick points just for, well, got the microphone. Testimony, and people can go look it up. Testimony from ExxonMobil. Dale Pittman is in charge of Alaska. What's it going to take to stabilize our oil production? BP's talking about spending $3 to $5 billion over 10 years. His number was $3 to $5 billion per year. That's $3 to $5 billion extra per year. They're already doing about $2 billion now. That's just to stabilize it. Question is, how do we get to a million barrels a day? Technically not possible. Testimony from ConocoPhillips. Technically not possible. It's not the tax structure. Okay, off state lands that is stopping you from pumping a million barrels a day. So when you look in the details of, and it gets complicated, I recognize that, but when you look in the details of the tax structure, there is problems that need to be fixed. But we have to remember one thing also. Prudhoe Bay is one of the top 10 most prolific oil fields in the world. This is not some backyard Jed Clampett found little oil well. And we need to be very careful with this asset. And when the hydrocarbon is gone, it's gone forever. We can't pull it back up the pipe and sell it again.
Just one more comment to follow up on that. I had felt a little bit more sorry for the oil companies on a personal level if I didn't realize and see that they had some of their record profits ever in Alaska last year. They made huge amounts of money, and I just didn't feel like I was in a position to have my help to make a little bit more.
Thank you. And I want to remind our listeners that this is a call-in show. Please call 225-9655 or 1-800-557-5723 if you have a question for the two Senate District Q candidates. And right now we have Larry from Klawak on the line. Go ahead with your question, Larry.
Thank you. I want to, either one of you have any interest in the timber industry other than keeping Viking Lumber in business?
Okay.
That's just the first part of the question. I'd like, obviously I'm going to have a follow-up here, but go ahead.
Okay, we'll start with that. And I believe that...
I think Viking Lumber and get most of their wood off of forest sales in the Tongass. I don't have any interest in it, and I certainly don't know of any of the companies I'm involved with give them any of the lumber that they use to mill through their mill. So I don't know. I don't have anything. I know they get their forest sales is where they get their lumber.
Okay. And Senator Stedman?
Well, I don't know where the question's going, so let me just kind of wade right in there. My concern is that we lose Viking Mill. And if that goes down, a lot of the little guys are going to go with it because they don't have the capital behind them and their efficiency of scale don't even exist. So there will be a ripple effect. So I am concerned about Viking's fiber supply. I think the state of Alaska is doing everything they can, although some people say they should be able to do more to get fiber off of the state forest to supply what's left of the timber industry. And let's not forget, we used to have two dissolving pulp mills. We used to have like four or so more sawmills running in southeast and about 2,500 more direct and indirect job or direct jobs from the pulp mills in the logging camps, and a lot more indirect, about 30% of our economic base outside of Juneau. So if I could wave the magic wand, we'd have a stabilized production of fiber off the Tongass to ensure that we have a viable industry. But it's getting to the point now, where we're down to one medium-sized sawmill, and it's not enough.
Okay, let's...
The state lands, unfortunately, the state timber forest that we have is so small that it wouldn't play a part. It's just really tiny in terms of what's available out there. The only thing that I could see that could be available out there for Viking is the second growth that is happening in the Tongass right now that belong to the native corporations that could be available for use there. But I understand that Viking employs about 35 or 40 people, and that's a huge number for an employer on Prince of Wales Island right now. And they carry the load, and that's a really beneficial company in Kowak and Prince of Wales Island.
Okay, and let's hear the second part of Larry's question. Larry, are you still there?
Right, yeah. Well, obviously, you really don't know much about the timber industry down here. The last large sale, it might have been 1 million feet, in Hollis on state land. They put a bridge in, and two bridges in. As soon as Viking got done logging it in an area that would be very good subsistence, too, it seemed like someone like you, Mr. Kukesh, would be somewhat sympathetic to that this is a very good subsistence area, good deer hunting through there. It even goes across, I think it goes across the Harris even down there. So there's fish also. You close the roads after this is done. There's another sale up by Control Lake. It was a large state sale. And as soon as it's done, you close the roads. So here's the other part of my question. Why do either one of you want to diminish the opportunities for small business? And by that, I mean you can't afford to bring a low boy in and a piece of equipment to fill in water bars and replace bridges so you can go up and prospect and find trees that you're going to make 20, well, I don't know how many times more money out of this tree than Viking Lumber is going to make out of it, even though, you know, and here's another question.
So, Larry, is your question regarding the road closures that come about after logging?
Yes.
Okay. Let's keep it simple and let the senators address that. So I'll bring you back up again after they've finished answering that question. Hold on just a second. Let's start with Senator Stedman.
Well, for one thing, we're not doing it. We're an appropriating body, the legislature, and a policy-setting body. But on the water, or the removal of culverts and the tearing up of the roads is not popular at all anywhere in Southeast. The federal government has some budgetary issues and some other issues that they need to deal with. But from what I understand, and we're just in the process of looking into this, some of that is being derived from the state fish and game. And I think we need to take a look at that to see that the fish and game isn't overreaching and having some of the culverts and ditching done that doesn't need to be done so people could access it. Because my understanding of when these roads were built a lot of them years ago, that they were going to be, the public was going to be able to access them and use them. And clearly that's not the case. There, again, budgets have changed on the federal level. And then we got the fish and game question at the state level.
The question of the culverts being removed, I've noticed that all over Southeast Alaska, and Bert is absolutely right about that. But your reference to me as a subsistence user, you're absolutely right. I don't know why you would want to move that, because it keeps a lot of land in use, and we don't want to have the use only be for timber cutting. If we could leave those culverts in and those bridges in, and people can access the subsistence harvest that's available out there, hunting deer or whatever, or getting to fishing areas, I think that's a good thing for the state. Everybody that I've talked to in the federal government and in the state always talk about multiple use of the land, and that's certainly multiple use if you allow those to be kept in there. The culverts, to remove a culvert and remove a bridge costs money, and somebody has to pay for that. Seems to me like we could leave it in there and have multiple use by allowing subsistence people to benefit from those roads and those bridges. So I'm supportive of keeping it there, but Bert is right. You know, we don't sit on the regulation or the people who make the rules on the state infrastructure, but I think you brought it to our attention, and I'm sure either one of us would be glad to look into that and see why they do that, because I don't think that's appropriate. It costs money, and we ought not to do it.
Okay, thank you. And Larry, did you say you had a third question?
Oh, no, just thank you for looking into that. That involves 12 people that I can name right now. That's not quite a third, I guess, that's employed at Viking Lumber. But value added will employ people for a lifetime, where Viking Lumber is going to be out of wood. And, hope they make it longer than I'm staying alive. But nonetheless, the interest in road closures is not only mine.
Thank you very much, Larry. I appreciate your question. And my next question was, do either of you have a solution in mind to improve Ketchikan's connection between Revilla and Gravina Islands, and how would you work to make it happen? This time we'll start with Senator Kukesh.
I wish that we had the opportunity to get a marker again. We don't have that anymore, but I don't have any idea how we're going to do that if we can't build a bridge. You see a beautiful road over there, and I see a beautiful facility over there, but I don't know how we're going to do that. We have the road that was built on Metlakatla, but that was built with through a federal training program, and where Senator Stevens set that up, and we have this road all the way across here, and then we're going to put the ferry system hopefully on the other end so we can go across the Saxman. That's another question there, but we also have an opportunity to bring hydro over from there, but I don't know how we're going to do that unless you get an earmark someplace and have somebody have that put back into place. That's a huge cost, but I think that there ought to be a connection someday, but I don't know how you're going to do it, because, again, you have to talk about budgets. That's a budget. That's a budget cost. It's a huge cost.
Thank you. Senator Stedman.
Well, the ball's in DOT's court. Quite frankly, I've been sitting for a couple, 3 years waiting for them to play their next card. And they'll play it here. And then we'll see where we go, what alternative they're going to recommend. My concern is they're going to recommend the alternative of the ferry. I think that's short-sighted and doesn't facilitate the community or the state in the long run, several generations, 50 years, 100 years out. The state of Alaska can afford to build a bridge. There's about $80 million still sloshing around waiting for the construction of the bridge. There's $35 million that's been expensed on a road that $35 million, $36 million might have to be returned if the bridge isn't built, the approach. So we have to just kind of wait and see what DOT is going to do. I personally think they've been waiting for me to not be the chairman of the Finance Committee to terminate the terminate the bridge project. I did request an audit done on DOT. That didn't go over very well at DOT. I also do their operating budget and their capital budget. And when that guy calls for an audit, that ought to have a few people stand up and ask what's going on. I think the previous governor looted the treasury with the monies that were supposed to go to that bridge and took them up to Wasilla. And I don't think that was the right thing to do. So I'll sit back and wait till the, you know, it's time to play the next card. I want to see a construction of a bridge.
Thank you. And we do have a caller on the line. It's Mark in Thorn Bay. Mark, go ahead.
Yes, sirs. My point being the fact only you have to build the bridge. It's not, it's like the Golden Gate. There was nothing on the other side. Because Covina has flat land. And so therefore, we can build on it. However, the, what are we supposed to say? You know, we got Senator Palin, I misspoke. The point being the fact that the bridge is required because therefore we can grow. Now, I live in Thorn Bay. However, what we need is infrastructure built. You know, and without infrastructure, we can debate it all day. However,
Mark, do you have a question?
What are we supposed to do?
Mark, do you have a question for the senators?
Yes, I do. What would you do, sir, to possibly increase the infrastructure in our area?
Well, I could
thank you, Mark.
Name you what I have done. Well, as I get to the point, seeing South Thorn Bay has been center of Thorn Bay for 9 years, we just completed the construction of Davidson Landing, which eases the access into the other side of the bay. We're also, I was over there a couple of weeks ago looking at the need for an outhouse over there at Davidson Landing. So we are trying to move forward with some economic generations for Prince of Wales. But that's just one example in Thorn Bay.
And Senator Kukesh?
Thank you. I appreciate that. We have infrastructure needs all over the state of Alaska. I represented 129 communities just recently, and most of them up in the interior Alaska still don't have running water or sewer systems. So it's not unusual to look around the state and see those needs everywhere. I think really believe the state of Alaska needs to get into it. It has to take some time to look at the budget to make sure we can do something for those communities that have no water and use honey buckets yet. The governor years ago said we're going to put the honey bucket museum. Well, hasn't happened. And we still have a lot of infrastructure needs out there. We recognize that. We look at the money we have available and use as much as we can on infrastructure. And if you look at the budget for the last couple of years, you'll see a lot of infrastructure money into that budget, including federal dollars. And we've matched a lot of federal dollars for infrastructure, specifically for infrastructure. Water and sewer is important to every place in Alaska. And we have a lot of places that still don't have it.
Thank you. And we have an email question from an anonymous listener. Do you support forward funding of schools? And this time we'll start with Senator Kukesh.
Yeah, absolutely, I do. And the Senate last year passed out a bill very early on education funding, and we didn't get it move. It didn't move anywhere in the House. I think mainly because the governor didn't support it. I like forward funding. It gives the opportunity to schools to budget themselves for the 2 or 3 years down the road and see what they have coming. They know what's going to be in the budget. Do you know what the cost for each student is going to be and what they're going to get? It's a good thing, and I don't like the idea of having pink slips go out to teachers, so I've always been supportive of forward funding. I like the idea of 3 years.
Thank you. Senator Stedman.
Well, as mentioned earlier in the program, the coalition, you know, we've had a very successful record over the last 6 years, one of which was moving to forward fund education. We've got $1.2 billion. It's $1.2 billion already set aside for the next budget cycle next winter. What we haven't set is the per student rate yet. It never goes down, so it's going to be some number north of where it's at. And again, there's $1.2 billion set aside. That was a big lift when we did it. Now we look back with $15 billion in excess savings and $42 billion in the permanent fund, and you know, we don't even count sometimes the $1.2 billion in forward funding education that's set aside. In some of our savings. But hopefully the legislature will continue to do that for decades to come.
Thank you. And we have a caller on the line with a question. This is Dan from Ketchikan. Go ahead, Dan.
Hello, gentlemen. I would just like to say that, or ask a question. Is there any thought legislatively to really leave a legacy, and then that building the bridge over the Green Islands, that's fine, but you're still just building a bridge on an island. Is there any way we could, I mean, it would take a lot of effort and more than just a little time, but to get some sort of a road punched through off of this island onto the mainland and connect up with a, excuse me, with a highway system or road system that would enable goods and services to be brought here that route. Any comments or thoughts on that, gentlemen?
Okay.
I'll take your answers off here. Thank you.
Thank you. And this time we'll start with Senator Stedman.
November 6th is a day to go to the polls and vote. And one of the things you can vote for is a bond package statewide. It has $19 million in it for the expansion of Shelter Cove Road. That helps in that direction. There's already $10 million set aside in cash, so that'll leave $29 million. I think it's going to be another generation in front of us that ends up making that hard link into Canada. It's quite frankly not even on the DOT's target site. When you get all the BS off the table, sit down in a closed room and ask them, what are we actually going to build and what are you just talking about building to the public? It's not even on their radar screen. So it'll be inched along. Hopefully with this generation, the next generation, someday we'll have that. Frankly, I think we missed the opportunity not going down the Stikine a couple of decades ago. Or another avenue would be out of Juneau to come down that river valley. But the Bradfield is a rougher valley corridor to go through, but someday you'll most likely see that, probably with a tunnel. And before that, you'll see a power line.
Senator Kukesh?
That's absolutely right. There's four places that I know of that need that have been trying to connect to the main highway for years. Cordova, very close, but have never done it. Juneau, through either Skagway or through up the Taku River, have never done it. To Stikine, is something we've heard about for years, and Ketchikan. There's got to be a road someday, and I support that. I think it has to happen. I'd really like to see every one of them have it, except we do have the local opposition in almost every community that says, no, we don't want to do that. And so we get, again, back to the question of should it still be the ferry. I really believe that it's going to happen. I want to just point out something. The state of Alaska hasn't built a new road in a long time, in many, many, many years, and we have to get back to building some roads. The road to resources is the only one I hear that's being talked about right now that the governor has on the table.
Thank you. And this is submitted by a listener earlier in the week. What would be the result if Republicans gain control of the Senate and the bipartisan coalition is disbanded? And this time we'll start with Senator Kukesh.
I think the governor would be very happy. The governor would have a majority in the House that would do his work for him or help him do his work. And there, it depends on what kind of coalition you have in a Senate. Or if you don't have a Senate coalition and you have a Republican majority, it depends on that Republican majority again. We have a minority right now that is very conservative. If they get a conservative coalition put together, then they would be fairly much lock and step with the governor also. So we would be back to where we were probably about 10 years ago, where the House and the Senate were both controlled by the Republican majorities. And I want to say something. The coalition that we put together was a coalition to move Alaska forward. That was our mantra. And it worked. It was a wonderful experiment that was successful. And the coalition was wonderful. It was wonderful to work in. And we did what we thought was in the best interest of the state. We agreed early on not to go to the far right or far left. We kept the coalition together that way. But I think that you're to the question of if you have a Republican majority in both, the governor's going to be happy. I wouldn't be, but the governor would be very happy.
Senator Stedman?
Well, it looks to me right now on the vote count, it's probably 11 to 9 at least, left with 11 Republicans. And even at that, you'd end up with a coalition because it takes 11 people to create a majority out of the 20 members. And if you only had 11, you'd be subject to the wildest view of all 11 and it wouldn't work very well, or the largest outlier of the 11. So there's most likely going to be some coalition, unless there's you know, a substantial amount of Republicans voted in, and then it would be controlled out of Anchorage. And we have, you know, the discussion here in this question, Republicans versus Democrats. But in the legislature, that's only part of the equation. Another big part is rural versus urban, and we're rural. And we have more in common with rural areas of northern Alaska than we do downtown Anchorage. So the rural aspect would suffer greatly, I think. I've had colleagues along with Albert that, frankly, when we were both in the Senate together, that frankly despised rural Alaska. And it was difficult to work with them. And I'm glad most of them are gone. I never understood their viewpoint and found it unpleasant to work with them. So I am concerned of the urban-rural divide in Alaska. And I would like to have a majority in the Senate that actually is structured to get something done, then gets bent up on ideological terms. We have economic issues to solve. If you're sitting in the middle of Anchorage and living on natural gas that costs a third of what our electricity costs, you don't, and all your capital is taken care of because you've got the majority of elected officials, you don't have to worry about it. But out in rural Alaska, we do. We would see virtually all our momentum, and we've started building momentum the last few years, and you can see it all over Southeast. We'd see that stop. So I'd want an organization in the Senate that's going to continue to move Southeast forward.
Thank you. We have a little less than 10 minutes left in this call-in forum, and we have another caller on the line. It's Jay from Ketchikan. Go ahead, Jay.
Hi. I just want to express my appreciation for the temporary repair on North Tongass, right out around Bob Pickerel's place, that has really eased the damage on our suspension. And I want to ask Senator Stedman how he can still be advocating for a bridge to Gravina, which would cost at least $33,000 per capita here on Revilla Island, when this North Tongass Highway is not being maintained, and it's taken years and years and years to get a temporary repair.
Okay, thank you. And the questions are really supposed to be for both candidates, so we'll give Senator Kukesh a chance to answer as well, but we'll start with Senator Stedman since it was addressed to you.
Well, that dilapidated road issue got delayed, or the reconstruction of it got delayed due to easement issues. That was the delay issue. The broader question is the maintenance budget within DOT, and I think 3 years ago we upped that by $12 million which was the biggest maintenance budget increase DOT's ever had since statehood, and I did that, trying to deal with some of these maintenance issues. This patch in North Tongass, there's an issue just as bad in Sitka, and to try to get DOT off the dime outside of Juneau, where they have their headquarters, is problematic. It's embedded with DOT. As far as on the bridge, as far as affordability, hell, we're going to give, what, TransCanada $500 million? We could have built the bridge and still had $100 million plus in our pocket. So there is no question that the state has the resources to build that bridge. Guys out of Fairbanks are talking about building a in-state gas line for $7, $8 billion. Another $7, $8 billion for Watonna Dam. These are in billions. We're talking a few hundred million, 300 million or so. And probably from where we're at right now, we're probably looking at 250 is what I'd expect the appropriation to be, somewhere in that ballgame. So can we do it? Yes. Can we get our revenue projection within 250 million? No. So one could argue it's even a rounding error in our revenue projections for the year. So I don't buy the argument for a minute that the state of Alaska cannot afford to build that bridge. It's a policy call, strictly a policy call.
Senator Kukesh?
Not so specific to the question, but I've known some DOT projects in my district I've represented that have just sat for years, even though they had the money appropriated. So I think DOT is proud of that big, huge problem to try to get some of the projects done that are maintenance projects. But I want to follow up on Senator Stedman's comments. The The dam that bothers me is the Susitna Dam for $8 billion. And it's not going to benefit any of us in Southeast Alaska. So I would really, and Senator Stedman and I have talked about this, about getting a fund specifically just for Southeast Alaska. If you're going to spend $8 billion on a dam in the middle of the interior of Alaska, then we should get something at least appropriately close to some of that money to take care of some of our problems, including building a bridge in Southeast Alaska. I don't think that's out of the question. I think it's a very doable thing in the future.
And if I might add, that's only half of what their request is. The other half's for the gas line. That's another 7-8. So we're it's staggering the amount of monies that our colleagues in Anchorage and Mat-Su talk about getting and wanting out of the Treasury. And the scary part is they're getting the numbers to actually vote the money right out of the Treasury.
Yeah, it's unfortunate when you look at Anchorage and the Wasilla area. They control half the legislature now. And we have to be mindful of that. We have to have people that are going to stand up to them and convince them that we have to get our fair share. It's interesting that most of the money comes out of rural Alaska, but we want to spend it all in urban Alaska. It doesn't work for us.
And we have just a little bit more time, but I think we have enough time for this question that was called in by Mark in Thorn Bay. Would you support a bridge to Gravina? This is still on along the same lines, but really support it. is what he follows up with, and we'll go with Senator Kukesh.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes, I think we've already answered that question.
I think so, too. So we can go on to, I think we have time, as long as you guys keep it short. This was an emailed question from a Haines voter. How would you plan to meet the needs, concerns, and priorities of all the communities within your new Senate district? Is meeting with local chambers of commerce enough? And we'll start with Senator Stedman.
Certainly not. The Chamber of Commerce don't set the priorities for the community. The elected city councils and assemblies do. And that goes through the local process, selecting mayors. That's the driving factor that sets the policy direction. And sometimes the mayors change and assembly directions change, and then I change accordingly. So it's more of a grassroots issue.
Our towns are small enough that it's easy to meet with the mayors and the councils, because I really like that, the mayors and councils. I very rarely meet with the chambers. I love to meet with them and have a discussion with them, have a lunch with them once in a while. But the question of who makes the decision, it's the mayors and the council, and, of course, the individual population of each community.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And that wraps up this evening's call-in show on KRBD. I've been your host, Layla Carey, and Maria Dudzak helped out on the phone. Thanks to our listeners who called in, and thanks to the candidates, Senator Albert Kukesh and Senator Burt Stedman. And remember, the general election is on November 6th.
And vote for the bond package. It's good for Southeast.